Welcome to part two of Mark Forsythe's B2B Synergy podcast. Mark continues our discussion on various aspects of bankruptcy law, including litigation and bankruptcy cases, the process of assessing a bankruptcy case, common misconceptions about bankruptcy law, and the importance of seeking professional advice when facing financial distress.
You mentioned litigation. Is there a lot of litigation? Are you involved in a lot of litigation in all these cases?
Yeah, in certain circumstances, but that's basically my primary niche at the firm. I can do it all, but I mean, if there's a litigation matter that's going to happen in a bankruptcy case, it's typically me that handles it. And it can be, like I said, this trust issue where they would try to consolidate a trust outside of bankruptcy into the bankruptcy case. There can be disputes over values of assets and contract disputes, all types of litigation matters. Can happen in bankruptcy court. It's a federal court. It's just like if you're outside of bankruptcy and you have a federal lawsuit versus a state court lawsuit, it's the exact same process in bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court is basically a subset of the federal court system.
Okay. So what is your process or the process for assessing a bankruptcy case when you first get a call or a referral?
Well, then that's the advantage of being a CPA is I really sit down, I look at the assets. Well, what type of assets we have? What are the values of those assets? I look at the liabilities. What liabilities are secured? What are unsecured? The nature of those debts. What's on the balance sheet of the business? What's on the personal financial statement of the individual? Too often I see an entity, a wholly owned entity by 100% owner, and the owner is borrowing money from the company, taking draws and not paying taxes on those draws. And then they get into financial trouble and the creditor says, well, how am I going to get paid? Let me look at the balance sheet. They look at the balance sheet. They see a line item as an asset loan due from shareholder. And that's fine to do if you're not filing bankruptcy, but if you can't pay your debts, that shareholder, that creditor now is going to want that shareholder to put that loan back into the business. And so that can be something where we don't want to file bankruptcy, right? Because that's going to tee up the shareholder or the owner for paying that money back. And so there's just a lot that goes on. And in that analysis, I might say, listen, you shouldn't file bankruptcy if you have too much home equity, right? Yeah, you only can exempt in Orange County $700,000 home equity. If you have a lot more home equity than that, trustee's going to force you to sell the house. And so if you don't want that, then we got to find other manners. And that's when I'll maybe refer the client out to an asset protection attorney. And maybe they can create some hurdles for creditors to get to those assets that might provide leverage for settling. Now, that process could be very expensive, asset protection work, and it's not foolproof, but it can create barriers that create negotiating power. So it really is very fact specific. When I sit down with the books and records, talk about the transactions, there's some. So if I can segue into another issue, I had this with a catering company up in LA at the actor strike. And when the actor strike went down, this catering company just, you know, went into major unsecured debt problems. And when the strike ended, they decided they just cut the government. They had a bunch of unsecured debt. They're getting sued by food vendors left and right. They came to me and said, hey, let's file bankruptcy. And sometimes you'll file for an entity just to write everyone notice there's nothing there, right? And that could be only one of the reasons. As long as there's no skeletons in the closet. Well, one of the skeletons in the closet here, when the client met with me, so I looked back and I asked him, did we get paid back any loans during the last year? So if we're an insider, which is an owner, relative and owner, shareholder, et cetera, the preference period goes from 90 days to a year. And they got paid back loans in that 1 year period. And so the strategy I had to employ was I just filed answers because I do a fair share of state court litigation. I just filed answers on all these food vendor lawsuits, kicked the can down the road. We allowed the 1 year preference period to lapse. We got outside that. And then we filed a Chapter 7 to let all those food vendors know that there's nothing there. And then they just walked away realizing there was nothing there. And we were able to avoid that money going back in. Now, if you didn't have anyone that was experienced in this, you paid the guy $9.99 on the roadside billboard to do that. He might not do that analysis. You file a Chapter 7 for the business, and now the owner's stuck with having to put a couple hundred thousand dollars back into the business. So, like I said, you got to go to the right bankruptcy professional. You cannot go to someone that doesn't have the experience or knowledge and seen these kind of real disasters that can happen.
In that example, you said like a owner was paying himself draws. So in other words, he was paying the creditor was saying that you have money to pay, but you're paying yourself. Is that how that?
Well, so an owner can take money out and be treated as a taxable event, right? Or they can borrow money from the entity, right? And they just owe the money back. And so it's one way that some 100% owners avoid having to pay taxes on money they're taking out of the business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if the IRS had a focus group and looked at businesses throughout the U.S., that'd be a huge source of tax revenue to find how many A's. Because at the end of the day, if I'm running my business, I'm drawing money out and I want to shut down my business, as long as I don't owe any creditors any money, my entity is going to sit there as a non-operating entity with me owing money to the business, and there's no creditors other than if I poured that as income, I'd owe that taxes, right? And so in that scenario, the creditor's saying, hey, you borrowed money from the business. You've got to put that money back into the business.
Where does he get the money? Is it like,
well, yeah, that's the question. That's why you might not file bankruptcy, because you'd rather make that creditor fight to get to you. But in a bankruptcy case, it's going to be a lot easier for that creditor to claw that money back.
Hmm. So there's a lot of things to think about in this
initial
process, huh?
Alan, I would say it's so fact specific. It's very hard to be general on analyzing bankruptcy. Every case has its own nooks and crannies and special facts that really depend on who is in front of me and what financial information they have in front of me.
Okay. All right. Let me ask another question here. For anybody wanting to know more about bankruptcy law, what are the three most important things that they should take away?
Well, if you're under financial stress and you want to relieve that financial stress, you need to sit down with a bankruptcy professional, talk about what type of debt you have and what type of assets you have, and if bankruptcy can provide a relief to that stress. And also, if you're facing obligations that you don't see your business handling it going forward, can I use bankruptcy strategically to get rid of some future obligations? I might be fine now. I might be paying my rent. I might be paying the minimums on my credit cards or my minimums on my loans. But is there a way out of this that I can just shed the debt? I mean, bankruptcy is all about relieving yourself from debt. And so the question is three things to take away is, are you facing financial distress, and is bankruptcy an option?
Okay. And then in that case, can you give me like three common reasons why people need a bankruptcy lawyer like you? Like, what are you saying the obvious reasons that they need to come to you?
You can't pay your debts, and the creditors aren't willing to settle. And like I said, I do a lot of negotiating where the first thing I do is I get a financial statement from the client, individual or entity, and start negotiating with the creditor. Say, here it is. This is what they filed. These are the assets they're going to be able to exempt. This is what's going to be left for you as an individual, as a business. You talk to them and say, listen, there's secured debt that's ahead of you. The collateral value is X. And if we file bankruptcy, you're not going to get anything. And so I it's hard to make it into three different points, Alan, because to me, it's just one point. Are you facing debt you can't pay? Or are you facing future obligations you don't want to deal with?
Okay. What are some common myths or misconceptions about bankruptcy law that you find yourself dispelling during client education sessions?
I think one of the most common ones is that an entity can file a 7 and get rid of its debts. And so, like I said, it's a very small window of entities that I will advise filing Chapter 7 for. Because what you do is you just open up, you open up the floodgates possibly of actions by a Chapter 7 trustee against entity and shareholders. And so that's even business attorneys I see all the time. you'll always have the misconception that we can just file a Chapter 7. Hey, I'm getting sued. Andy's getting sued in state court. We'll just file a Chapter 7 and get rid of it and shut down the company. Well, no, it's not going to shut down the company. The plaintiff is going to file a proof of claim in the bankruptcy case. And if there's any skeletons out there amongst the owners, shareholders, getting money or selling assets, et cetera, you get totally exposed. And so you don't achieve that. That's probably the biggest misconception. And the other misconception is on the positive side, a lot of people don't realize how much of assets can really keep in an individual level. A lot of people the homestead exemption for decades was in California, $100,000. And it was only back in 2019 that it got adjusted after years of when it should have. And now it gets price adjusted, but now it's up to a range of $400,000 to $700,000 in California, which is one of the biggest exemptions across the U.S., other than Texas and Florida that have unlimited homesteads. And that is, depends on the county you're in. So Orange County clearly is at the max range, $700,000. Kern County, like in Bakersfield, probably closer to the $400,000 range. So that's a medium. So the homestead exemption is determined by the median home price in every county in California. So Orange County's median home price, obviously above $700,000. So you get the max. Kern County, I'd say closer to the $400,000 range. And so not realizing that there's that much home equity to protect sometimes is something surprising for my clients.
So in other words, you have the home equity, you have your home, it's not subject to...
It's not subject to involuntary liens. So if you can't get rid of your first mortgage, you can't get rid of any consensual lien. If you went and borrowed money in your house with the bank and the bank said, okay, I'll give you this money, but you have to give me a lien on your house, and you agree, you cannot, the homestead exemption cannot preempt that. But what it does preempt are involuntary liens. Credit card companies suing you, getting judgments, lawsuits, any kind of lien you don't agree to that gets put on your house, that's an involuntary lien. And the homestead exemption can jump ahead of that.
Okay.
And one last thing about homesteads, another misconception, Alan, is you have to own your house for 1,200, who knows where they came up with this number, 1,215 days. You have to have owned your house for 1,215 days to be able to claim homestead. So another misconception is someone moves from out of state here into California, you have to reside in a county for 180 days before you can file bankruptcy in that county in California. But to assert a homestead exemption, you have to be in the house for 1,215 days, which is quite a long period of time. It's almost three months. And so that's a misconception. One of the first questions I'll ask on individuals, how long have you owned the house?
Wow. What words, phrases, or conditions lead to direct referrals for you?
I'm getting sued for a lot of money. Or I'm suing some guy and he's in a lot of financial trouble. And what do I do when I'm getting paid by a guy and I think he's about to file bankruptcy, which actually kind of segues into another point, if I can real quick on this, Alan, is for creditors. One of the things I highly recommend is that when you get payments from debtors, try to make sure that you have specific invoice numbers. Ask them, hey, I would need to get paid on invoice X. Or let's say, for example, I have 4 months of invoices, okay, that I need to get paid on. And you're trying to work with the debtor. They're not in bankruptcy yet, but they're in financial trouble. And you say, listen, I'm only going to keep giving you goods if you pay the old invoices. And so what you want to do is the guy says, okay, I can pay you X dollars. You don't want to have some round number. You want the debtor to pay you the specific amount on the earliest, on the most current invoice, because that's going to be less likely to get recovered as a preference. If they send you just a gross amount, like, okay, let me send you $5,000 on that $10,890 bill. No, you want a payment on a specific invoice with the invoice number written on the check. And pay the most current invoice, because that's going to be less likely to be recovered as a preference. The older the invoice you get paid, more likely it's going to get recovered and clawed back into bankruptcies. So get if you're a creditor with the dealing with a distressed business, make sure you get paid on the most current invoice first, with the invoice number referenced on the check for the exact amount of the invoice.
Okay. So we covered a lot here, Mark. I really appreciate your time today. Learned a lot about the bankruptcy law and your services. We thank you for joining Power Partners USA. Looking forward to networking and working with you and
absolutely
among our other Power Partners. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to meeting more Power Partner members.